History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. What we've learned is that they don't have to go untold, as long as we're willing to take the initiative and ask a few questions, and then invest enough time to listen as those memories from long, long ago take on new meaning in the here and now. Our goal has always been to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories. So we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And when it comes to education, entertainment, and inspiration, I don't know if any of the veterans we've heard from on this program over the years has ever contributed more in those three areas than Jimmy Weldon, who passed away July 6th, just a couple months shy of his 100th birthday. His friends at American Legion Post 43 in Hollywood, where Jimmy was chaplain emeritus, planned to honor his legacy in September when he would have reached the century mark. But we're going to take the hour to honor him today. There are a lot of things we can say about this World War II veteran, but it could never be as memorable as what we'll hear come out of his mouth, whether speaking as himself or an unforgettable television cartoon duck.
There's a little duck named Yakky Doodle, and his best friend is Chopper, a great big bulldog. Fibber Fox or someone I'm talking about now in the Yogi Bear show. Someone's chasing him down the road and he calls to Chopper. Chopper tells him to run. He gets there, and when he does arrive, Chopper says, "Well, now you're safe, Yakky. Where is your mama?" And he always looked up sadly and said, "I don't have no mama. Would you be my mama? Only you'll remember it this way."
"Help! Chopper! Chopper, you're after me!"
"Run, little feller!"
"I'm running."
"Yakky, now that you're safe, tell me, where's your mama?"
"I don't have no mama. Would you be my mama?"
"I can't imagine I did that 53 years ago for Hanna-Barbera. Paul, how you doing? This is Jimmy Weldon."
I don't know if we've ever had an introduction quite like that on Hometown Heroes. That is something, and I'm sure you rang a lot of bells for a lot of people. How do you still do those voices at 92 years old?
"Well, just barely making it. You heard that. I always often tell, I say, Yakky, you don't sound like you used to. But, Paul, you're from Fresno. I spent most of my time on radio in Fresno, and up there I always had a show called Webster Webfoot. That was a little duck that I had on television. And so when Hanna-Barbera saw me on the air, they said, they called me and said, "Would you do the voice of a little duck in a new series we've got?" And I said, "Yeah." Had no idea what it would mean, but little Yakky Doodle has meant more for my career than anything I ever did. Of course, it is Webster's voice.
"I'm the star."
"Okay, don't do any more, Webster." But anyway, they do recognize Yakky Doodle more than little Webster. But I'll bet you remember Webster when you were a little boy, don't you? Are you? "Well, no, you're not even old enough. You weren't even born then." "Good gracious, I forgot." Yeah, this is back in 1952, 3 and 4. I was up there in 56, 7, 8, and then went back in 59, was there till 68 in Fresno on Channel 47.
Mm-hmm. You know what my first television job was? Channel 47.
Oh, golly.
And we're going to learn today the history behind Webster Webfoot and Yakky Doodle and where it all came from. And we're going to learn that it might never have happened if you didn't make it through World War II.
My passion today is talking to young people about America. I did a thing that was used on the USS Kennedy in the Persian Gulf during the Iraq War for 4,500 sailors. It's a flag, a tribute to our flag.
I've seen the video of you doing this, and it's powerful, and I'm glad you're bringing that up because I want all our folks to hear it. Do you want to do it now, or you want to save it for them?
Oh, well, if you don't care, I would do it.
Go for it.
All right, okay. I want you to imagine that you're looking at a flag, Stanley, and I'm out in the audience, and I'm going to walk up to the flag and hold it, and I'll even look at the audience until I say the end, and here it is. "I am the flag of the United States of America, conceived in the dreams of liberty and the hopes of freedom. I was designed by the hands of Betsy Ross and her sewing basket was my cradle. Though I was never an orphan, I was adopted by the Continental Congress in 1777 and proclaimed the national emblem of a nation newly born on this continent, fighting valiantly for survival and destined to bring to all mankind a new concept in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I rode with Ethan Allen, the Green Mountain Boys, at the Battle of Fort Bennington. I was flown above the decks of Old Ironsides and the mass of Yankee Clippers. I blazed the trail with Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett. I led the settlers coming west and crossed Death Valley in a covered wagon. Once I fell to the ground at Custer's last stand at the Little Bighorn. There were no living hands left to pick me up. But I galloped up the slopes of San Juan Hill with Colonel Teddy Roosevelt and his Rough Riders in the United States Cavalry. I was carried through the halls of Montezuma onto the shores of Tripoli by the United States Marine Corps. I stayed with the boys till it was over there, on the battlefields of the Marne, Chateau Thierry, St. Mihiel, and the Argonne Forest. I saw many of the youth and manhood of our nation fall and lie still in death. That given their last full measure of blood, the war was over for them forever, but I kept my lonely vigil over their graves and stayed to watch the poppies growing into crosses row on row in Flanders Field. I was raised by six brave Marines and sailors during the hell of Iwo Jima in the final hours of World War II. Haven't changed much, 239 years. I still have my original 13 stripes. But as each state came in the Union, a new star was proudly added to the constellation of my blue field. Start with 13, now they're 50. I've draped the caskets of our nation's heroes and borne to their last resting place the bodies of presidents, generals, admirals, humble privates, and the unknown soldier. Wherever free men gather, wherever there's justice, equality, faith, hope, charity, truth, and brotherly love, there too am I. When you stand with your hand over your heart and recite the Pledge of Allegiance to me, don't merely mouth the words, but think of what they mean to you and mean what you say. And when you come to the phrase One Nation Under God, remember it matters not what your religious belief. It only matters that you hold your faith dear, that you practice it daily, and then you preserve it forever. History will never write my obituary, for I am the stars and stripes forever. I'm Old Glory. I'm your flag. I am you. I did that for the Burbank Middle School. The little boy in the back of the room said, that never happened when I told him I was with Patton's 3rd Army Combat Engineers that liberated Buchenwald concentration camp. When he said that, I just screamed out, don't say that! I was there! He backed up against the wall. Later, I talked to the largest Lions Club in Long Beach. When I mentioned this, a little man came out of the audience with a yarmulke on the back of his head, and he said, Jimmy, I'm Rabbi Cade. I was at Buchenwald concentration camp. We stood there hugging and crying in the middle of the room. Later, he had a program called Survivors of the Holocaust and had me speak. He introduced me. He said, I'm here because Jimmy's here. That's one reason. I said, don't say that, Rabbi. But it did make me feel good, and I called my dear friend in Palm Springs, Dennis Daly. He was the top writer for United Press International over 20 years. This is the largest news organization in the world. It doesn't even exist anymore. It's gone. But I said, Dennis, what's happening to our country? He said, what do you mean? I told him what happened about that little boy, saying that never happened. He said, you've got to get a 501c3 nonprofit corporation to talk to school. Center for Youth Patriotism. This is the motto statement that Dennis Daly wrote. To instill in California youth a sense of civic, nonpartisan pride and a better understanding of our common heritage through the use of visual, non-visual programs and personal appearances. And I thought, golly, now I can talk to schools and tell children about America. But the biggest honor, Paul, came when I talked to the Military Order of World Wars. General Dan Pemberton walked up to me with a $100 bill in his hand. He put it out and he said, Jimmy, put this in your little foundation with a promise to me? I said, sir. He said, promise me you won't stop talking to young people about America. I said, General. He said, promise me. And I said, I will, sir. Walked away with a tear in his eyes. So now, when I'm speaking to these young people, I sit down, I look in the audience, I say, let me tell you something. You own this country. Those people in Washington work for us. We don't work for them. If you find something that's not in the Constitution, question it, because they're trying to rewrite history. Hey, Paul, I'm sorry. I just got rambling. Can't stop. Forgive me.
I don't think anyone's complaining, Jimmy. God bless you. I wish they were all sitting here with me and could see the emotion in your face, but I know they hear it in your voice. They hear and they feel your passion for America and what it stands for. But I think it'd be interesting. I think our listeners would be interested to get your story and know where all of this came from, because clearly you're an amazing man with amazing energy and amazing talents. But take me back there. Take me back there to Oklahoma as a boy during the Great Depression. What was your life like back then?
Oh, Paul, thank you for saying that. I was 7 years old. I'm always talking about motivation. Key to success is motivation, having something to do. I wrote a book called Go Get 'Em, Tiger. And in this book, I always say, have a reason for getting out of bed, some reason for being. When I talk to AARP people my age, I say, I greet you in the name of Insurance Actuary Tables. We're all dead. They look at me and I say, wait a minute, we're all going to die. I was supposed to die 8 years ago. I want to tell you how to live. And they think, golly, that's different. But anyway, I tell these young people, plant a goal in your mind. Don't let anyone ever talk you out of it. The most important decision you ever make is planting a goal and deciding what you want to do. Secondly, to the commitment to your God. God's most important. But then second, be sure and know what you want to do. Have a reason, like I said. I was 7 years old and my two brothers took me to a movie, 10 Nights in a Bar Room. Now imagine a little seven-year-old boy going to a movie like that where the town drunk is a star and he's always at the saloon drinking, and his little daughter, 3 years old, walks through the swinging door every day and say, Daddy, will you come home with me? Like Foster Brooks, yeah. And this one day, she walked through the door and called to her dad to come to him, and the bartender's having a fight with him. He threw a bottle of beer at him, and he ducked and hit this little girl in the head, and I screamed, Mama! Mama! My two brothers had to take me home. I tell young people, remember, this computer of ours, our brain, is the most powerful piece of equipment that's ever designed. Everything you've ever seen, thought of, or done is in this computer. Not for instant recall, because people like my age, we have senior moments. One guy said, the other said, I can't remember your name. She can't. No, but I don't worry, because at our age, we lose millions of brain cells every day. We do. Yeah, your name is in one of those I just lost. But anyway, back again, when I was that little boy, I can see that now. I was sitting on the floor crying, and I said, Mama, he killed that little girl. She said, what little girl? I said, Mama, I saw him, he killed her. She said, babe, what are you talking about? And I tried to explain. Moving, she said, no, that was play-like. I said, play-like? Mama, I saw the blood in her head. And she said, no, that's probably ketchup. Well, as a seven-year-old boy, I said, okay, I can understand that. But then when she said, they probably gave her some milk and cookies after they did that scene. I remember sitting on the floor looking up at her, and I said, Mama, if it's me, I'd want some vanilla wafers. She said, probably have those in Hollywood too, babe. Paul, never did I ever dream I would write a book one day called Go Get 'Em, Tiger. And the first chapter is The Witnessed Murder. Mama, he killed that little girl. What little girl? Mama, I saw him, he killed her. Babe, what in the world are you talking about? Almost 64 years have raced by since that little seven-year-old boy made those disturbing statements to his mother, who knelt down and tenderly wrapped her arms around him. Had no idea what she's going to say would crystallize my future. Yes, I was that little boy. Paul, God's blessed me in so many ways. You can't imagine. I've spoken to more National Manhattan Association chapters than any speaker in the United States. I used to go all over everywhere. All these CEOs say, put on paper what you tell our people. I said, I just barely got out of high school. I don't care. Write it down. So I did write it. Mm-hmm. But then, anyway, that's my chapter in my first book. The only one I've got, first chapter.
Well, maybe you should write another one.
No. They've asked me that. I couldn't. But anyway, from that moment, I wanted to be an actor. And I knew one day I was coming to Hollywood, California. Heard a little boy going, oh, boy, oh, boy, one day. And I said, hey, that sounds like Donald Duck. What do you think it's supposed to sound like? I don't know. I tried to imitate him. I couldn't make the sound. But finally, one morning, I went, that's it. Out the side of my mouth. Then I tried so hard to make to speak. Finally, 12 years old, I answered my teacher in school one day. She asked me something. I said, "Yes, ma'am, that's right." I had to stay in after school. On our 50th anniversary, our high school reunion, she walked up to me and she said, "Do you remember when I made you stay in after school for talking that duck talk to me?" I said, "Yes, ma'am, Miss Bailey." She said, "I was always afraid I might have inhibited you." I said, "You really hurt me." I'd answer the phone.
"Hello?"
If it's one of my brother's friends, I'd say,
"Oh, it's you."
They'd grab the phone. "Mama, don't let him answer the phone. He's crazy. He embarrasses." But anyway, that's where it all started when I was a little boy.
So you started the duck talk as a little boy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you said you wanted to be an actor from that point on, huh?
Yes. I knew what I wanted to do. And that's why I said, plant a gold in your mind. Don't let anybody ever talk you out of it. Because all of us are different. And when I speak somewhere, like in Pepperdine, I'll say, "How? What do you want to do?" One of them says, "I want to be an attorney." "What do you want to do?" "I want to be a doctor. I want to be a so-and-so." And I say, "You see all the difference? We're all different." Then I say, "You are the most important person in the world. You know more about yourself than all the people in the world combined. And you're the only person you're never going to leave. So it's up to you. You can do anything you want to if you believe you can." My business card, Paul, at the top says, Mark 9:23, "If thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth." We had a carpenter that used to walk on the streets of Galilee. He said time and time again, "As ye believe, so shall it be done unto you." It's so simple, we don't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
All we have to do is just ask.
It's time for our first break, but if you've never heard Jimmy Weldon's story before, I don't think I really need to tell you to stick around. You can already tell what an incredibly captivating storyteller he was. The World War II veteran turned entertainer passed away July 6th at the age of 99. We're honoring his legacy today, and Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. Over 1,500 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.